Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste. I've been around for a long, long year. Stole many a man's soul and faith.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to what we call is the best in soccer talk. We say self-proclaimed, okay? Because it's kind of like when they called the Rolling Stones the world's greatest rock and roll band, right? It's probably one of their handlers that came up with that, but can't really argue with that one either. Daspit Law Firm. Moment here for John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Whether your accidents, car, boat, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to assure you they'll treat your case as if it's their own. DaspitLaw.com. They're going to work 24-7, nights and weekends. Call them, 713-322-HURT. All right, so Ken Fogarty, former player with the North American Soccer League Fort Lauderdale Strikers, played in the days when he was playing with Gerd Müller, Teofil Cubillas, some legendary players like Jan van Beveren, who was recently down in Beaumont working in a lot of coaching and with youth down there. Ken, welcome in, buddy.
Thanks, Glenn. Glad to be here. Thanks a lot.
And he's I want Ken's life, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. This man shows up in different parts of the world all the time. Miguel Sada, longtime follower of the Houston Dynamo, longtime supporter, has done a lot of great grassroots stuff engaging the Hispanic community to the Dynamo. Miguel, welcome in.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for having me.
Come closer to that mic because we want to hear what you have to say tonight. And from Danish Inspirations, he's the one and only Jan Christensen. You hear his goal call on commercial breaks here. That kind of scares me because that goal call could be better than mine.
I know, Glenn, Anna, but that's okay.
and he's a very humble Dane, by the way. So welcome in, guys. I want to start it off with this, and we'll just touch on it briefly. Let's go back to Barcelona's amazing comeback against PSG. So I read after the fact that PSG, the players, after the 4-0 first leg win, are doing a bunch of social media, holding up four fingers. And it's just absolutely mind-blowing to me how stupid they were. And you would have to think their manager said, look, guys, do not go out on social media. Do not rub this win in, because if there's one team in the world you don't want to kick when they're down, it's Barcelona, Ken.
I agree. I think it's unprofessional. It's immature. And what motivation to give to Barcelona? You know, I mean, these players should have been so experienced to know that they'd won the first leg, but that was all. And it was just, I just think it's madness. We talked about in the break. Madness. Why on earth would you do that? It just adds fuel to the fire for Barcelona, and it came back to bite them on the butt.
It would be tough to be a manager, right, Jan? It would be tough to be a manager in this day and age because your players aren't always the most intelligent. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, there's and they're going to use this social media because they're in the moment, and they're so in tune to using it, yet it could be harmful.
Yeah, we had a coach at FC Copenhagen many years ago. He used to put up some headlines of comment what the other players' team said about them. They're not that good as they think they are and stuff like that. And now it's just in your face right away with the social media. And of course, I would say, have they beaten Bayern Leverkusen 4-0, they would say, okay, well, maybe they could play a little more in my judgment. But here we have a team that's one of the world's, if not the world's best team, you know, that you start teasing with. And a lot could be discussed about the game, but the data is that's extra fire. That's extra fire, and I'm sure that they used it. I'm sure that Luis Enrique, he said, hey, guys, look, this is what they're saying about us, you know?
Interesting. Now, we heard from the two older guys in our three set here. Thanks. Let's hear from Miguel Sada. Miguel, would you agree with this, or do you think it's not as over the top as I'm making it?
Yeah, I guess they messed up with the wrong guys. I mean, you don't do that to Barcelona. Messi had a tour, I think, to Egypt. He postponed it because he wanted to be focused for this game. So these guys were all focused in the game. You add more wood to the fire, you're going to get in trouble.
Yeah, social media is, this is a whole nother. Ken, you've spent a lot of time in coaching. I've done it in the youth side of it. And the time period that I coached in the youth game, it really wasn't as prevalent. And now I'm looking at this going, wow, even if you were a youth coach, this becomes an issue. But if you're a professional coach, this is a whole other dynamic that you've got to deal with.
Absolutely. The game has changed so much in the last 20 years. And that's one of the biggest facets of it. I mean, the media exposure the players have now and communication by media. I mean, they can literally send out a tweet to hundreds of thousands of fans immediately after a game, for example. So I wonder sometimes, should there be a better job of educating professional players in terms of communication and responsible communication, as we talk about PSG, for example. But it's a different world we live in now. It's a different world, Glenn.
Yeah, well, I mean, coaches can set that standard, can't they? I mean,
absolutely.
You can implement fines. You can do anything you
want.
But
Glenn, you would think that's part of the preseason indoctrination. You know, these are the rules and regulations, you know, as we prepare for the season. That has to be something that's talked about amongst the players and controlled. And I think it was a poor job of controlling that, you know, that, in that particular instance.
Yeah, I agree. And look, there are some teams that do have policies. The phones are shut off. I think Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, Miguel, says, hey, look, you come in, phones are off.
That's what they said. Kun Aguero was complaining about. It's like, we get Wi-Fi maybe in the second floor, but not in the dressing room. He literally shut down the Wi-Fi. He said, you got to focus.
And that's beautiful.
That's how it is. I mean, that's how it is nowadays. Everybody's on their phone. You go to the locker room, nobody's talking to each other. They're all on the phone.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And it's in a team game where you're trying to do things to bring people together as a collective group, yeah, and it doesn't make a lot of sense because phones make us all solitary.
Yeah, it is a problem. And even in college, you know, as you know, I'm assistant coach in University of St. Thomas women's team. And when we told them that, hey, phones have to go away, we were always like, we told them then somebody died, you know, because they were shocked, you know. But the phones, just the focus has to be on the game, you know, and the focus has to be on, and especially in the professional game where it's such a, it's a game of inches, you know. It's a game of that 50-50 ball. If you don't get it, you lose the game. So, I mean, to me, it's shocking at a club that's where the players are worth 600 million euros, you know, that they don't have a clear policy on that. And somebody must have gotten in trouble. I don't have the data of what they said, you know, but somebody must have gotten in trouble for this.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, so I'm going to gear this one, Miguel, towards Jan and Ken, because they saw the FA Cup game today. Manchester United in this one until the sending off, Ken, and what did you think of the sending off, Andres Herrera?
I actually don't think they were in it that much, Glenn, as people make out. You know, I think they missed Ibrahimovic up front. That was a big miss for them. But I think in the general play, I thought Chelsea controlled the game completely. And at times later in the second half, they were almost playing with arrogance. They were toying. I mean, to see Man United camped out, all players outside their own area, literally that deep, that just showed you how dominant Chelsea were. I don't think it was such a bad set of foul for the second yellow card, but he should have known better. You know, again, immature, I think, just a mark of immaturity by an experienced player. So I thought he made a mess of that and affected the outcome of the game. But even if they'd had 11 players on the field, and for me, there was such a difference between both teams. I mean, Chelsea completely dominated it for me. I know Rashford broke away and could have snatched an equaliser later on, and he should have scored. But in terms of the general play, I thought Chelsea were another level.
Jan, they're frightening when they break out. I mean, when they break out and have room to go at a team on the break, four and five guys running. I mean, it's pretty frightening.
Right, and they were clearly the better team. And I thought Hazard, the first 20 minutes, man, just showed Manchester United that he's a tremendous player, and they couldn't control him at all. And
but Jan, if Pogba's worth the most expensive player in the world, who ran the game today? Look at how much is he worth?
Yeah,
because he completely dominated the game.
And N'Golo Kanté played Pogba off the field.
Where was Pogba?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
I thought he was on the sofa with me watching the game, and he may well have been.
Pogba's goal. You see how lax he was at that tackle when he took the shot? If he'd thrown himself into him, he would never gotten the shot off.
Sure. Yeah, he didn't close him down.
Right? Not at all.
I think Pogba is the African word for missing, actually. I looked up in a... No, I'm just joking about that. But it could well be.
Yeah, how does this kid have a chance based on all the hype?
I think he'll be better as he gets used to the English league. But the sending off again, the referee had warned them. They played very physical.
Sure.
They were clearly told to be very physical, Man United. And they had some. And he warned them right before that happened. Hey, you know, so he goes in and makes that after the referee. Next time I'm going to give a card, you know. And he,
but Jan, you know as well, Herrera, you know Hazard's going to go down at the slightest touch. Yeah. You've got to know who you're playing against too. And just immature, I thought.
I know he's being protected, and his manager's making sure he's being protected. Yeah. And at every moment he can remind people through the media and everything that Hazard needs to be protected, he is. All right, Miguel, let's talk a little bit. And here's one thing that slipped by a lot of people this weekend, and this was pretty fascinating. The referees went on strike in Mexico, and not a singular game was played this weekend. And it's led to a lot of very interesting stuff. Do you have any updates on that? Because our good friend Tom Marshall, we posted something on Soccer Matters Facebook page about what's going on.
Yeah, pretty much it's a type of red card in the situation, how it evolved. The referees want a bigger punishment to Paul Aguilar. I mean, everything that went by that game, Club America, it's a big club. They always backed by the media because they control media over there pretty much. So the referees want their place there. I mean, they want a bigger suspension. Otherwise, they're not going to come back to the league. That's how it is right now.
And they want some protection.
Yes.
Because what Aguilar did was attempted to headbutt a referee.
Oh.
So I believe him. I think he's getting a ban for a year is what they're saying.
Only a year?
A year.
That's what the referees want.
They want at least a year.
Yeah, they want at least a year, but they were thinking about 10 games because it's Club America. It's a player that plays for the Mexico national team. It will affect a lot of people if he was suspended for that long.
And Toluca's Enrique Treverio, he pushed a referee named Miguel Flores in the chest, I'm reading here. So these are guys that, you know, I mean, can't strike and touch a referee.
Glenn, is that another aspect of how the game has changed? You know, you could say 20, 30 years ago, it would never occur to a player to even assault a referee in any way. I mean, it was tough to question him. But now I think players have got so much power because the game is, and rightfully so, about the players. You know, I sometimes wonder, do they have almost too much power in some sense? Is it, you know, and do they feel in their own minds that they can get away with this stuff? Because that, to me, I'm, again, an older guy, an older generation, but that is unfathomable to me that you would strike a referee. You know, you may be really angry at some of his calls, but to physically assault a referee? It's incomprehensible to me.
It's mind-blowing to me. Before the strike officially was ended, here's what Tuca Ferretti of Tigres said. He said he was happy to see a resolution at hand. He says, quote, "My opinion is that it hurts all of us, fans, teams, referees, players, everyone," he said. "It's great that they have now brought the situation to a happy conclusion." You know, you got to have law and order in your league, for crying out loud. You have to have rules or your league's not going to exist. I mean,
so the ref went on strike because he was struck. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, they banded together and they banded together.
Good for them, I think. Good for them.
Because they didn't think the punishment was going to be harsh enough. Is that right,
yeah,
Miguel?
Yeah, they know they can affect TV rights. I mean, how much money do they make broadcasting these games? I mean, they're going to be at a loss there. The national teams are playing, so you got to make up these games eventually. And that's going to affect a lot of things. I mean, a lot of the players, preparations, TV, you name it.
Let me throw this in. How much?
Yeah, what happened was the initial punishment for the two guys was not as severe as the referees felt it should be. They thought it was a little slap on the wrist, and they fought it. They said, "We're not going to." And then, now it's been reversed. And I don't think there's any question. I think it's a healthy it's a healthy occurrence, good, without a doubt. All right, let's move it on here. Let's go to our Houston Dynamo now. That 360 degrees have changed into a three-headed attacking monster over two games. In MLS, we have seen what the influence is, Miguel, of two wide men that have pace, that have a willingness and desire to take people on, that widen the game out, and it's been exciting.
It's a very exciting game. I mean, people are loving what Ellis, Kyoto, and Cubo Torres are doing up top. I mean, you have Vicente Sanchez in the bench, Mauro Manotas in the bench. I mean, you have all this attacking power. It's attractive now. There's a show that the Dynamo can sell. I mean, it's going to put fans on those seats. It's just going to take time and consistency. You got to be consistent. You got to keep making goals. Now, I don't know if the team's going to be scoring a lot of goals and then also receiving a lot of goals, which is usually what happens when you have all this manpower up top. Sometimes you go at a game 5-4 or 4-3. You see a lot of goals in this kind of
game. Let's do it. Well, let's win a lot of games at 5-4. I'm all for that.
Yeah, the guys love it. I mean, there's a lot of endurance coming to the games. We're going to lose now the three endurance for the national team. They're going to be gone.
Take on the U.S. on March 24th.
Exactly. So, I mean, these players in Honduras, they're big time. I mean, they're on the cover of the magazines, newspapers, all over the place.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about tonight the fact that we got 300,000 Hondurans in this community. How do we get them out to BBVA Compass Stadium? So let's hold that thought. I want to get Ken's thought and Jan's thought about the new-look Dynamo and the way they're playing, because Ken Fogarty, he's right on the field. He's like a match official. He'll tell you a little bit about that. He sees it up close and personal. So we'll come back with that. So it's Ken Fogarty, Miguel Sada, Jan Christensen of Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, the best, by the way, contemporary furniture in Houston. And Miguel's got an event, too, we'll talk about a little bit when we come back. I'll just mention it's here. It's out. Play Them All. It's a Red Bull-sponsored Neymar's Junior's 5, they called it. It's going to be in Houston April 29th at Sports Creek, 2619 Polk Street in Houston. It's NeymarJuniors5.com. And, boy, we got a lot of respect for him after how he took that game on his shoulders in the last 7 minutes against PSG in the second leg. We'll take a break. We'll come back.
I have no time to think about
listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
Oh, I always get happy when I hear some Run DMC. These guys were creative, huh? Mixing hard guitar with rap. I mean, these guys were forerunners, man. Any of you rappers out there tonight, get on your knees right now and pay homage to Run DMC. And I'd even throw in Grandmaster Flash as well. And all you people wearing Adidas Superstars, those guys were doing it way before you were. Free plug for Adidas. 713-780-3776. Welcome you back. Ken Fogarty played with the North American Soccer League, Fort Lauderdale Strikers, also has done tremendous work here in the youth soccer community, working, mentoring a number of teams, now at the Texan Soccer Club. Miguel Sada, longtime covering the Houston Dynamo, has done great work grassroots-wise here in Houston. Has always been behind the Houston Dynamo, first and foremost, when they came here. And has done great work, has great ideas about the game. And Jan Christensen has been playing for forever. Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture, but one of the all-time very knowledgeable about soccer, also in studio here tonight. So thank you for that. Assistant coach over at St. Thomas with the women. All right, so as we come back, let's go back to our Dynamo thoughts. So I was going to take you into it, Ken. You know, the new Y game, the new Honduran connection, the best getting pulled out of Kubo Torres, your thoughts, because you sit right down on the field. Give us some of the insight from being close to the field, how the tempo has changed through your lens, right, seeing these guys based on what we've seen the last couple of years.
Well, I work for the league as a PMA, professional match evaluator, so I've been covering the games for the last 5 years, Glenn. So particularly last season compared to this season. And I think last season was like dead man walking. You know, it was poor. And compared to, and while it's still early days, only two games, it's like night and day. You know, let's be specific. This team is playing with width and depth, and by width and depth, it creates space for good movement, good passing. You know, it's not congested. There's intelligent movement. There's intelligent switching of the ball. The moving defenders around, gaps open up. So I think it's intelligent, skillful soccer. Only two games, but I was so impressed with the way they played.
And it's a system that can suffocate people when it works right.
It's tremendous.
It is a tough system to implement because you have to have workers and you got to be fit, but it can suffocate people, and we've seen that.
I think the only weak side from my perspective would be the defensive aspect, where it's a much improved back four. You know, but will the wide players possibly tuck back and help out defensively? Because they're very much offensive players. You know, the front three certainly are. But look at the third goal, Glenn. It comes from a Columbus attack where it's saved, it's played out, I think, to Torres. Was it Torres or Ellis?
Yes,
and he switched it over, and it was a tremendous 50, 60-yard switch ball.
From Alex.
But the first touch bad receiving player with Torres, correct? Yeah. With the outside of his foot, that's world class. And then to cut inside and finish it, it was a magnificent. It was the highlight of the night for me.
That was a little bit of a concern of mine, Jan, the three set, because, and we're gonna take phone calls too, because we're getting some phone calls, 713-780-3776, but is the supply to these guys. And you do have to have people that have a passing range over 40, 50, 60 yards when teams are committed forward to unleash these guys. Alex proved it with that ball, that he's capable of hitting that ball. And as Ken said, it's like he was killing a bag of cement. And then, you know, he bends it in. It's got to be a goal of the week candidate.
Yeah, and as far as I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that they widened the field, actually, the Houston.
A little bit more.
They widened the field a bit. Great. You know, because of Kinnear, he wanted it narrow, and you know, so. But with this style of, and I think some of the style reminds us a little bit about Liverpool as well. The way Liverpool plays, they play a high press, and they use the flanks a lot. And but as Glenn said, it takes a lot of energy, and it seems like they have it. And the dangers that we've seen for Liverpool is that if they haven't scored in the mm-hmm. middle second half, they get a little tired, and that teams have scored against them because they get tired, you know. But
now so. look at the chronology of the way this game though went. Right, 2 minutes in, because you have a forward that is as lightning quick as he is, that's as much about Kyoto as it is about the bad ball made by Zach Steffen in goal. He pounces on a ball and scores. Columbus takes the game to the Dynamo. Tyler Derrick, you know, has a couple of freaking phenomenal moments at the right time for the Dynamo, and then they get a goal off a corner. Now, with a 2-0 lead in the second half, we saw a refined Dynamo, Miguel, then really drop off and become not a pressing team, but a counter-attacking team in the second half, and it worked to perfection.
They got the speed. I mean, once you got Ellis, you got Kyoto, you got Torres, they're all young kids. I mean, they're in their early 20s. So you got players that are going to be hopefully here for a while, and you can explode that. I mean, you got all that speed, counter-attacking. You saw that against Colorado when they were in the preseason. Defenders cannot catch them. I mean, these guys outrun those guys all day long. They're lightning. I mean, it's amazing watching them play. They fit together so good. I mean, the three of them. And you still have Mauro in the bench. He's a young kid, too. He was a good striker last year.
I mean, 6 goals in the final 8 games. By the way, what was impressive to me, Miguel, he comes off the bench. He was hungry. That kid wanted to score so bad, and it was such a wonderful symbol of his engagement now, and that he wants to be – he doesn't want to be on the bench. This is another champagne problem Wilmer Cabrera has. He's going to get his moments, and they're coming very quickly here.
That's correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think no Dynamo player has scored 3 goals in 3 games consistently. So that'll
one
be
of the
a
lowest scoring
if
teams in the
Kyoto,
league.
Kyoto or Torres score a goal, that'll be a record. 3 goals in 3 games.
Yeah. Look, we all have to, and this is not being disrespectful to anybody, but the quality of players here has been totally revamped, and that's great on the Dynamo for getting that done. But to think, in my opinion, Ken, and you watch these games, how methodical the Dynamo have been over the years, lacking team speed, lacking people that wanted to take anybody on, really. And just in a sense, the ball seemed to be something that nobody wanted. I mean, it was, let me get rid of it as safe as possible and as quick as possible.
Glenn, I sit on the halfway line, so I hear the instructions from the coach. And I have to tell you, here's an example. I go to a press conference last season after the game, mm-hmm. and Owen Coyle sat there. And the reporter, and credit to the reporter, says to Owen Coyle, "You're the home team. You didn't have one shot in 90 minutes. How can that be?" And Owen kind of fobbed it off, saying, "Well, our passing was off and stuff." But I thought, what an indictment of the team and of the coach, you know. And you'd be sitting on the bench and it was so one-dimensional. Look at this key, for example, like Owen would say, hit Barnsley, a 56-yard ball to Giles Barnes, who has 2 central defenders marking him. That's not the way the game should be played. It shouldn't be played that way here in Houston. Even with the plays they had last year, I thought the style of play was all wrong. But now you look at the style of play now in the first 2 games of this season, phenomenal. Intelligent, creative, attractive. There's a method to it. There's a purpose to it. It's true to like night and day.
Well, let's talk about Wilmer Cabrera because, number one, his contacts, along with Matt Jordan, have helped the Dynamo to revamp this team. Who we got on the line here? Sean, is that Sean Tyler? Let's bring Sean in and let's see what Sean has to say. Sean, thanks for coming on the program tonight. What's on your mind, Sean?
Hey, I have kind of a curious question. Will we ever see an MLS team field all-American players and then have their philosophy be like that, much like Chivas does in Mexico and Bilbao does in La Liga?
Don't think it's ever going to happen. I just don't see it happening. It's not something that happens a lot. I don't see it happening in Major League Soccer. Just don't see it happening.
Okay.
Now there is a little bit of worry on my end with the balance of foreigners and American players in this league now, because the balance has shifted to more foreigners, and it is a league that still has to have the American player be the backbone. Thank you for that phone call, Sean, because you brought us into it. So I'll take you guys into this, and then we'll get back to Wilmer Cabrera. We got to be careful, right, with the balance of the foreign player and the American player in MLS.
Well, there was a precedent set before about an All-American team. We had Team America.
Correct.
So that precedent's been set, you know, and it wasn't a great success. But I think this, Glenn, I coached in this league in 1999.
But actually, that team had a couple of guys that were actually foreigners.
Several foreign players.
Now that I remember.
Several foreign players.
One of my childhood friends, Dan Canner, was on that team.
Yeah, who I played with at Fort Lauderdale, actually.
Yeah, we grew up in the same hometown. Yep.
So I think that the standard of the game from 1999, when I coached in the league, has vastly improved. And I was thinking about this a lot over the last couple of weeks. And I think it's this. I think the foreign players that they brought into the league have greatly improved the league. I think there's a better coaching methodology being applied at clubs for the younger American player. And I think it's such an advantage for young American players to train with and play with and against good foreign players. I think that enhances their development as much as anything. So for me, it's if you're going to put an attractive product out on the field, it has to have a good balance between good quality foreign players and good young American players. And it can't be too top heavy either way. But I think having the foreign players in the league is massive for the league. And it's, I think it's a massive help for the American player.
I'm not banning it.
No, but I think
and I understand that
good
relationship.
For the American player, Glenn.
I understand that relationship. So. Miguel, what I see now is younger DPs now, younger South Americans.
You get younger DPs, but it's the same problem that's happening in Mexico. Club America plays with 10 foreigners and one Mexican. And now you get the best of the best in the Mexicans, because before you were lining up whoever. Now you can line up the best, because the Mexican league, I'm sorry, but it's the one of the most attractive leagues in the continent. And it's one of the most powerful because of all the foreign players.
Sure.
And we're dealing with that here right now. And we're seeing that because at some point the Dynamo had like no Hispanic players at all. Like there were none. Now there's like 14 or 11 players that are Hispanic.
We saw the light here.
Yeah. And there's a show. There's a show on the field now. I mean, we have an
I like the way you use the word it's a show, because I would say it's entertainment.
It's a show.
Because the show and the entertainment has to be a part of it. By the way, Albert Elise is a great example of a guy that can't get a game at Monterrey in Mexico because there's a stack of guys in front of him, and he's here, and he's motivated to perform.
I think that we look in Europe. All of the top teams, who has the least foreign players of all the top teams, would you say? That's Barcelona. They have the least, but they have 13 in a squad of 26. But like Manchester City has 20 foreign players.
Yeah, but I think their balance in recent years has changed a little bit.
Yeah, so all the top teams has at least half the squad of foreign players, right? But like China now, they want to only allow 3 foreign players on the field at the same time, you know, because they want to develop the Chinese players, you know.
Yeah, well, there's a reason why some guys might not go there, because they don't want to be 3 big stars on a team with, you know, trying to groom a bunch of young Chinese players. I mean, I know they're splashing money at everything.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing that happened here. I mean, at the beginning, 1 DP. It was hard for 1 DP because he's the center of attention. Now there's 3. And even the Dynamo just demoted Manotas from a DP with target allocation money.
Good business.
So they open another designated player position. Mm-hmm. Which might they go for it during the summer?
Let's spread a rumor. Chicharito's coming to the Dynamo. Chicharito is going to be aquí.
Yeah, we need an attacking midfielder. I think that's where they're going to go for. They might let go one of the foreign players to open another spot for a foreign player and use that allocation money for that DP.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not so sure. That's an easy thing to say. It's a number 10. But I think they're going to have time to get to the summer transfer window, and they're going to have time to watch and see if this system is going to blossom the way they want. And if it works the way they want, number 10 might be off the table if this thing continues to work the same way. Because a number 10 would change the way this system is working right now. If you remember, even when Brad Davis was here, I think
the tempo of the game had to be played a little bit at the latter stages of Brad's career to Brad's tempo.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
You know, how would Brad Davis fit in with the current Dynamo team with all his pace? Would be a different story.
Yes.
If you're playing those three across the top, would he be one of the three midfielders? I don't think so.
But remember that Dynamo with Dwayne De Rosario playing as a number 10, Stuart Holden to his left. I mean, that was a great attack from the Houston Dynamo. Brad Davis, Brian Mullen, and Brian Ching up top.
Tremendous attack.
It reminds me a little bit about that Dynamo, this new Dynamo that we're looking at. We just don't have the number 10. We don't have a Dwayne De Rosario yet.
So, Mikel,
but you may not need it.
We might not need it.
So, Glenn, let me ask you. So, for the first two games,
remember that was a 4-4-2 with with more of a striker around a penalty area and Brian Ching.
But what
on
what
a much smaller field?
So the starting 11 looks good.
Yes.
But what about the bench? Do you have the quality and depth on the bench? Because at some point you're going to have to bring those players in, and there can't be a drop off in the level of performance.
What we saw, I think, was good stuff in the last game from Juan David Cabezas. I think all the subs have come in and done well.
Okay.
Manotas came in, was hungry, did not drop the level. Who was the third?
Wenger.
Andrew Wenger comes in. He doesn't drop the level either.
Garcia.
I think it's been good.
Vicente Sanchez in the first game, he came in as a sub. He was dangerous. Even during the preseason, Sanchez with Kubo Torres and Manotas playing up top, they were scoring goals left and right. So
good.
You got talent on the bench.
Good.
All right, I'm going to take you to something today. You know me. I'm like, Jose and Conte don't shake hands, John? What's that about? They don't shake hands after the FA Cup? Is that a big deal? Is that a big deal, or is that clickbait out on the internet world? Because it's all over the internet. Is it clickbait?
It's Mourinho, you know, and Conte went out on the field, and Mourinho, they just didn't look at each other. They were arguing a little bit during the game, and Mourinho is just, if he's having a bad day, he doesn't shake hands with anybody, you know. I mean, it's just the press makes too much out of it, I think.
Chelsea fans, though.
I think you can hate the guy, but I think you still shake his hand. You show to the world you're the bigger man. You can be seething inside, but I still think you shake his hand.
Remember that happened here at MLS All-Star game when Guardiola came here and played in Portland. He didn't shake the hand what's his name, Porter.
He got mad because somebody got kicked, right?
Yeah, he said they were being too aggressive. He wanted to pull his team from the field. That was the first time I see that.
Yeah.
And he didn't shake the hand. Yeah. The coach came by to shake his hand. He didn't check his
hand. Those Bayern Munich, right? They played Bayern Munich.
Munich.
Portland, right?
Uh-huh.
But you have to be
Who got kicked that he was upset
Thomas
about?
Müller.
Yeah.
Was it Thomas Müller?
Yeah, Thomas Müller got kicked.
But you can be smart about it, Glenn. You can go over and shake his hand and all the cameras are looking at you. And as you shake his hand, you can say you're an absolute jackass. You don't know that. So you can be a bit sneaky.
It's part of the game now. I mean, it's social media. It blows it up a proportion.
Oh, my God.
Those elements of the game you want to remain, because there is a thing called sportsmanship, and it is important. It is important because there's kids watching. You know, all this stuff is important. It, just because it's such a moneymaker now and it's entertainment and it's, you know, super managers. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about managers when we come back, because the managers are, you know, they're more important now and their egos are bigger than the players. It's blown out of proportion. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to come back. As we go to break, let me just remind you a couple things here. Bar Munich down in Midtown. It's another one of the great soccer-watching spots in Houston. Say hello to my friend Raymond down there. It's a great open-airy spot. We've had a number of events down there as well. Football fans, you're going to love it. It's right in the heart of Midtown. It's Bar Munich on Louisiana. BarMunich.com, 2616 Louisiana. Bar Munich, a Soccer Matters Pub. Also, we'll remind you again of the Houston Red Army event. This is a big deal. Hand me that, please, you guys. So this is Norman Whiteside is coming over to Houston. Played in the World Cup for Northern Ireland, 17 years of age. He's going to be one of the guest speakers. Bobby Tambling, who Ken was just mentioning, is a Chelsea legend. Amazing goal scorer. We're having what's called a sportsman's dinner. It's going to benefit the Curing Children's Cancer Fund. $135 are the tickets. You get a full couple-course meal. The host hotel is going to be the DoubleTree Hilton downtown. There are people coming from around the country that are Manchester United and Chelsea fans. You can call Tom Clare at 281-812-4805 for tickets. Jesus Martinez, 281-433-2660. Or Michelle Tarver at 281-210-4864. It's a great event. I'm just grateful that Tom Clare came to me, and then I passed this on to the Curing Children's Cancer Fund because he knew of the pediatric cancer involvement I have. So our thanks to Tom. Let's support this thing. It's Friday, June 16th. Get out. It's for a good cause. We'll take a break.
This is DeAndre Hopkins, wide receiver for the Houston Texans, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. We continue to roll on here. We did post the Memphis Depay goal that he scored from the halfway line. He says, I'm not David Beckham. They call it the goal of his life, Lyon beating Toulouse. Get over to Facebook Soccer Matters to see that. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. If you dare, if you really care. We welcome you back, 713-780-3776. Danish Inspirations, Jan Christensen, in studio. Miguel Sada, longtime supporter of the Houston Dynamo, works in the media, covers the Dynamo, grassroots involvement. Ken Fogarty, former player with the North American Soccer League Fort Lauderdale Strikers, also has done oodles and oodles of work in the community here when it comes to working with young soccer players and coaching and player development. So we thank all of you for your contributions to Houston soccer. One thing that I noted at the stadium was they had Billy Sofidis, who played for Panathinaikos in Greece, played, believe it or not, in 1969 in the Astrodome for the Houston Stars professional soccer team. And the Dynamo made a great move. They interviewed him on the scoreboard before the game, and they asked him about playing in the Astrodome. So I love the reach back. I think that's important. You got to reach back. You got to reach forward as well. And that's some stuff that's been a long time coming, I think. And last year we had a players' reunion here with all the former pro teams that was successful. And it's re-engaged some of these guys to what's going on here and gotten them into BBVA Compass Stadium. So I think that's a great thing. All right. So when we saw Atlanta United, everybody, and 35,000 people, or I'm sorry, 55,000, 35,000 in the Minnesota. Snow for Minnesota. We saw this Orlando Stadium that's just a magnificent soccer stadium. What were your thoughts, Miguel, when you saw that first weekend with what's going on with MLS? Because, look, when we got engaged here in Houston as a community with the return of pro soccer in 2006, it was 11 or 12 teams. It's now 22. We'll have 23 next year. It's mind-blowing where it's come.
I mean, the attendance in the MLS, it's second to none to the European leagues. I think Germany is one of the best ones over there. The MLS is growing in different areas. Like, who would have thought Atlanta would have bring that many people to a game? And Minnesota, I mean, Portland, Seattle, they're bringing a lot of fans to the stand. I wish that was our situation here in Houston. When we were at Robertson Stadium, we would get 30,000 people in a playoff game. Now we cannot even get 16, 17,000 people in the stands. I mean, I guess it's the hype. The World Cup came by. Barcelona's playing good. There's more social media interaction. More people can watch more games. All this makes the game international to where anybody can watch a game from their cell phones. They can watch it on their computers. And hopefully that helps the Dynamo too. I mean, having a good team helps a lot.
So you hit a great touch point here because there are these markets now, the Portlands, the Seattles, the Atlantas. A lot of them are benefiting, obviously, from the newness and the excitement. But look, 30,000 season tickets in Atlanta. That's not a joke. But then you look at some of the older MLS teams, and I put the Dynamo in this category. D.C., New England, Dallas,
Chicago,
even Columbus to an extent. And I'm not talking about the way they're playing, but I'm talking about their relevancy in their community and their attendance. And I'd even put L.A. Galaxy in there, and I'll tell you why. Because every time I see a game there, there's a lot of empty seats.
That's true.
And they may be sold, but there's kind of the haves and the have-nots right now when it comes to relevancy and attendance. Do you see that, Ken?
The clubs you just mentioned, Glenn, they seem like jaded franchises to me.
DC United in there, too.
Yeah, who Ben Olsen's got his work out there too. But they seem jaded franchises. You know, I mean, not only Minnesota, a new franchise and good crowds, great stadium. I mean, as a general observation, I think MLS has done a great job on and off the field. New franchises,
100%.
New stadiums, improved quality play in the field. You know, but do the new franchises kind of outshine the more established franchises? Are they, you know, are they a little long in the tooth in some ways? Do they need a freshening up in some way?
I think people got fatigued in a lot of these markets. I really do. I think they got fatigued and it didn't get freshened up yet. And that may even lead us to the point one day, look, I know the team's attractive right now. We're all excited. Maybe you need this monster star in Houston at some point.
Remember,
maybe you're not going to be able to make it without it because you got to rebud and refresh your team every year to keep it exciting. It's almost like it's a, you know, your product has to be shined up and spit shined and changed in order to keep it going. I mean, Jan, you're a business owner.
Yeah, I judge that the marketing of the Houston Dynamos have I don't think has been right, you know, for years. I mean, I think they got comfortable. They won two championships. Okay, now we're profitable and we're comfortable and we're just going to sit back and enjoy. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened. I think the organization needs to be refreshed. You know, I think we need some stronger people in here that really knows about the marketing and can do a better job getting the Hispanics to the game, because in the city we have over five million people here. We should sell out
6.5 surrounding areas.
There should be, man, we can't get in because it's sold out.
But these are business problems. I mean, every team's got every team's unique to their own city. I would say. You know, there's an argument that's put out there, Miguel, that, oh, because you're a bigger city, it's more difficult for you to attract fans. I'm not buying that. I'm sorry. I'm never going to buy that. I know it offers different challenges.
It is. Look at Cruz Azul in Mexico. I mean, their stadium, it's always empty. There's like, what, 20 million people, 25 million people in Mexico City. The stadium is empty.
Yeah, but their criticism is their management,
yes.
And it always has been.
And they have attractive players. I mean, they always bring great players. They haven't won a championship maybe in 20 years. But the fans are not coming to the stands. Monterrey was one of the worst teams in the league, and their stadium was always full. It's based on media. I think the media plays a key role in all this. They need to bring that hype to the fans. The show has to be good, so the players on the field have to be good, attractive. People are paying, what, $20 to park, $15 per ticket. You bring the family beers. It's $100 a day, at least $100 for you to come to the game. But you pay that for a Texans game. The Texans, they do all this show on the field. That's what sells. The Rockets do the same thing. We don't even have cheerleaders anymore at the Dynamo. So it's like you took out all those things, and I think it affected.
These are business problems to me, though. You have to repackage your product, okay? And the first step for the Dynamo, and let's give them big kudos because they've done that.
Absolutely.
With the on-field product right now, and I think we're pretty convinced. It's only two games. The snapshot needs to be 10 to 12, I think. But I don't think there's any question. We're going to have a lot more fun going to that stadium. Now, how do we spread the fun to everybody? You know, how do we get into these Hispanic communities and some of these other areas of town that are going to bring us? And you got to have the corporate fan. Every team has to have the corporate support and the corporate fans in the boxes. But you also got to get those loyalists that are going to be out there game in and game out. And we have some great fans, but we don't have enough of them.
You have the supporter groups. I mean, they sell out their section, but what else can they do? I mean, they can do so much. They can just grow so much. They need support from the organization. They need support from these players to go to the local leagues. All these Hondurans come to the games to watch their players. Imagine the players went back to their leagues to just spread the word, come support us, show us some love. I mean, these guys stay after the game to sign autographs. Even if it's raining, they were
any fan could have went to that new beautiful area that the Dynamo have built behind the – I guess it's the South Goal there with the tunnel.
It's downtown, the restaurants.
No. I'm talking about in stadium.
Yeah,
they call after it the Vito. Game. Oh, yeah, they yeah. call it the Taste of Vito.
The terrace, yes.
Taste of Vito, the Tecate.
Yeah, Tecate Terrace or something.
By the way, I'm a Bud Light guy on this show. But, you know, after the game, they're all there. Some of them have their kids, and, you know, they're engaging the fans. Any fan can go there. Mm-hmm. And connect with these guys and the coach if they hang out long enough.
It's open an hour
it's
after the game's
personal.
Over.
The it's very
over,
personal.
The game's over, you got an extra hour there to hang out at the bar, talk to fellow Dynamo fans. I mean, that's the people you hang out with because they're speak the same language as you.
That's where you can get those personal connections that really grab people and make them feel like they really, really know the player even more. Speaking of Al Bataon, those guys know how to throw a party, Miguel.
Yeah.
they've been throwing down at King's Court. I'm telling you, they're bringing bands in there. I mean, they're killing it. They're having a great time.
Well, why not take 5,000 tickets and make them $10 each, you know, and let, you know, to the, because there's a lot of Hondurans and other people, they can't afford the $100 day down there. I mean, they can't, you know, so make it $10 for, take 5,000 tickets.
You could do, I mean, that's a great idea. I mean, you could create a limited 2,000 to 3,000 tickets that go out at a lower price per game that, if you did it over the course of the season, could probably, if you sold them all, could raise another $600,000, and it could engage the college student and the cash day Hispanic fan that is a loyalist and loves the game. I don't know. That's an idea.
It is. It is an idea. I mean, there's a lot of people that would love to come to the game. Some of them don't even know how to. I mean, that's the truth. They don't even know anything about the team. They don't know who's playing.
The location of the stadium.
I mean, I brought friends this last game, and they loved it. I mean, they want to come back. There's no bad seat. Wherever you see it, you see the game. You can watch the game perfectly. I mean, there's no bad seat at that stadium.
We did a thing back in, and I know, Ken, you did this a lot, but when I was playing pro here in Houston, we did a thing called, like, these caravans where they load a couple players in a van, a bunch of balls, giveaways, and you showed up at places, and, you know, you went out and you did clinics, you engaged, you gave them soccer balls, and it works wonders.
But that doesn't happen anymore, Glenn. I correct? Know. Why? Because again, the culture's changed. Again, do you think if you said to players that's what we're going to do, how do you think the modern day player would react, and how do you think an MLS player would react in general to that? Do you think they'd be enthusiastic to go out and promote in a community or do a public appearance? Do they still do that?
I think the Dynamo get their players out in the community, but I don't know if it's like it was back in the early days. I don't see it as much. I don't.
Think they got too comfortable already. They realized they were a winning team. They're trying to bring that back. You know what? There's a lot of fans that they didn't go through the winning years. They jumped in when the team was doing bad.
It's true.
So they haven't seen the team do well. Therefore, they only buy the tickets whenever they want to go. They're not buying season tickets. They're just buying one ticket.
Mm. Well, listen, it's positive now. We got a much more entertaining product. I know the Dynamo know that they have a lot of work to do. I think I've been very, very impressed with Wilmer Cabrera-Yan, just based on the way he set this team up. He's got them so focused. He is keeping them grounded. And, you know, he's doing this all the while, still working on building the system, both individually and collectively. So it's been impressive what he's brought.
Yeah, and I think bringing in a South American coach, you know, that also understand that culture of the players and getting in new players from South America, you know, is going to be that's going to be a big deal, I think, to get the Hispanic community involved.
All right, quick thank you to Jan Christensen, Danish Inspirations Contemporary Furniture. Miguel, quickly, promote your event.
Okay, we got the Neymar Juniors 5. You come here, it's down the street from the Houston Dynamo Stadium, April 29. $30, 5-on-5, 7 players, 18 to 25-year-old. You win the tournament here, you go play in Miami. You win Miami, you go play with Neymar in Brazil.
Perfect. Ken Fogarty, thank you so much for being
here,
Ken.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Always insightful. Great to have everybody's contributions. And it's also nice that it's three guys that are, you know, you can certainly tell when you have a discussion with all three of you that you care about the sport, you care about its place in Houston as well. So thank you very much, guys. I picked a great panel tonight. I'm gonna give myself a pat on the back for that. All right, that'll do it. For Tyler Scott, I'm Glenn Davis. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Facebook, Soccer Matters. Back to our normal Wednesday time next week. Thanks for tuning in. PodcastArena.com and iTunes for the podcast.
ESPN 97.5.